You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our paternity leave is generous and you can take it whenever you want. Apparently. I'm your host, Justin Amosdeski, and if you enjoy how forward-thinking we are here in the Midside, please tell a friend about our show. Joining me this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yes, very glad to be here. We started a little late because I got the brand new iPhone XS. And I'm super excited to have it beep because I can't do anything because it's loading from backup. So everyone send me text messages right now and it'll probably show up on the show.
So you know they don't know when hearing this that we started recording late, right? Did you just want to brag about getting the new iPhone?
A little bit. I mean, it's such an awesome piece of technology, and the fact that nobody, that everybody, all the social justice crew likes to hate on technology, I think it's I'm contributing to the farce by saying how awesome this is and how much more productive this will make me.
Well, it's definitely farcical that you just told them to text you to get it during the show when they're going to listen to this the day after you recorded it. So unless there's time travel involved in the new iPhone, I'm not sure how that works.
Hey, I have special access to apps that you don't have.
Oh, well, this must be part of your privilege as a woman, right?
Yes. Females have a time travel app. You didn't know that?
That explains a hell of a lot. It explains a hell of a lot. But you know what it can't explain? All of the ridiculous shit that happened this week. Let's try and understand the ununderstandable, the incomprehensible in the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
All right. So first up in the news, don't forget to join our Patreon, patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/Patreon, where you can contribute as little as a dollar or as much as even more to every awesome piece of content that we produce. It really helps keep the lights on and it helps us pay for Daniel's paternity leave. So make sure to join themidside.com/Patreon or patreon.com/themidside. Today's first headline, Kobe Bryant removed from film festival panel due to 2003 rape allegations. This is, of course, in the fine news establishment, hotnewhiphop.com.
We can thank producer Christine for using that news source.
So the Animation is Film Festival was forced to remove Kobe Bryant due to an outcry of online protests. Kobe Bryant has been dropped from the jury of a forthcoming film festival due to his 2003 rape allegations. According to Variety, the Animation is Film Festival, following an online protest filed by patrons of the gala event. Bryant, who became the first NBA talent to win an Oscar for his directorial work on an animated short titled Dear Basketball, will be held off the panel for the event, which is set to be held at the TCL Chinese Theaters in Hollywood Boulevard. Eric Beckman, CEO of GKids, the company responsible for holding the gala, has issued a statement regarding Kobe Bryant's dismissal from the panel. Quote, "After discussions with the various stakeholders of Animation is Film, the decision has been made to remove Kobe Bryant from the 2018 jury. We are a young organization. It is important to keep our collective energies focused on the films, the participating filmmakers, and our festival attendees," explained Beckman. An online petition published to change.org started making rounds last week, urging people in the arts, as well as patrons, to make a stand against toxic, violent behavior towards women. Kobe was arrested in 2003 for sexually assaulting an employee at a hotel spa in Colorado. She later refused to testify against Bryant, so the charges were inevitably dropped. Kobe Bryant has since apologized to her publicly for what transpired. So, Justin, how long does Kobe Bryant need to wear the scarlet letter?
Well, first of all, the thing I love about this story is, do you remember Shrek when they're torturing the gingerbread man?
Yeah, I remember that.
And he's like, not the gumdrop buttons. That's what I hear when I read an article and it says, due to online protests. It's like, not the online protests. No. it's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I feel bad for Kobe Bryant for this, because now he can't fly his personal helicopter into downtown L.A. from his swaggy home in Newport Beach to go to this film festival. But this whole thing is ridiculous, William, because, and this pains me to say as a Celtics fan, but there were no charges ever pressed against him, correct? He settled this out of court because she refused to testify against him. If that doesn't smack of a woman just trying to make money off of an NBA star, I don't know what does. And this happened in 2003. So there were allegations in 2003 that never went to court, were settled out of court. And now, because he's trying to make a film that didn't win Best Oscar for Best Animated Short. Yes. So yeah. He wins Best Oscar for Animated Short. And because of this thing from 2003, that, by the way, he was never convicted of, never charged with, we have to not let him do this. This is beyond fucked up. This is what, when people say men are complaining and are afraid, and, you know, people on the social justice side say men have nothing to be afraid of, this case right now is evidence against that. It is 100% evidence against that.
So how is this different from not having O.J. Simpson be the on the jury for this film festival?
Besides the fact that O.J. Simpson has committed crimes since and gone to jail since.
Okay, that's a good thing. Are there other differences?
I mean, look, as much as we don't like it, as much as we would say reality disagrees with it, O.J. Simpson was found innocent by a jury of his peers.
Not, well, criminally, but not civilly.
Right. Well, there's a difference, too. You just said, did you just give the answer to your own question by answering me?
Well, I'm trying to channel Daniel a little bit by asking leading questions, but yeah. I'm not as good.
I mean, that's a big difference right there. I don't know the details of the settling that Kobe did. Sometimes, and this is what I assumed happened in this situation, but I'm going to Google the apology in a second when you talk. Sometimes people will go after these athletes just to settle, to get money out of them, just so they don't have to deal with it. And that's what I always assumed happened in this situation.
How dare you not hashtag believe all women? I think there's another interesting thing in this article. It's 2003 rape allegations. This is at the beginning of the article, but then in the end, Kobe was arrested for sexually assaulting an employee. Now, I know that, like, I know this is going to channel Adam Carolla, so if you're playing the drinking game, finish your shot. But, you know, there's a spectrum here, just like with murder, there's a spectrum here between violent rape, on the one hand, and grabbing someone's ass or making a funny face in front of their boobs, on the other hand. Right? Like pretending to grope their boobs over their armor, just to give two concrete examples. And I don't know, hopefully while I'm vamping, Justin will pull up what the allegations were and what the apology was. But like, even in this article, it's just, we're lumping everyone into one bucket, right? If this person really is a rapist, a violent rapist, then certainly this would be the right thing to do. But if it's something else, then maybe it's the right thing to do. It's kind of, I don't want to sit necessarily pass judgment on this particular organization without more information. You know, everyone has their own freedom of association. They can decide who they want or don't want on their jury. But at least from what I can see, at the beginning they thought, here's a good filmmaker to have on your jury, which makes a lot of sense. So then we have to look at the motives of the mob that's trying to get him off this jury. It seems like it's kind of petty.
Well, it's 100% what it is. It's Dr. Drew talks about it. It's the town square where you used to put people in stockades. That's what it is now. Now the mob decides who gets to do what. Did these people not know about, I mean, everyone knew about Kobe Bryant's allegations, right? Everyone's about, so you're telling me these people who put him on the panel didn't know, and then all of a sudden people raise a stink and he gets kicked off? It's just, it's ridiculous. Look, I found the apology.
All right.
And I'm going to read two, I mean, it's like three paragraphs, but I'm going to read the first paragraph and then the beginning of the second paragraph, because that's all you need to know. First, I want to apologize directly to the young woman involved in this incident. I want to apologize to her for my behavior that night and for the consequences she has suffered in the past year. Although this year has been incredibly difficult for me personally, I can only imagine the pain she has had to endure. I also want to apologize to her parents and family members, and to my family and friends and supporters, and to the citizens of Eagle, Colorado. Okay, now that, I'm going to pause for a second before I go to the second paragraph. That sounds like he did it, right? He's all these apologies. He's even apologizing to the fucking town. Apparently, man, if you rape someone, you have to apologize to the town you rape someone in. Does this apply to murder as well? Any crime you committed?
That's a good question. If I jaywalk in LA or in Santa Monica at work, do I have to apologize to the citizens of Santa Monica?
No, because doesn't everyone? Oh, no, wait. LA is the town where you can't jaywalk in. Yes. So, yes, you have to apologize to Santa Monica. Okay, so let's continue. I also want to make it clear that I do not question the motives of this young woman. He did not, however, in 2004 say hashtag believe all women. No money has been paid to this woman. She's agreed that this statement will not be used against me in the civil case. Although I truly believe this encounter between us was consensual, I recognize now that she did not and does not view this incident the same way I did.
All right.
After months of reviewing discovery, listening to her attorney, and even testimony in person, I now understand how she feels that she did not consent to this encounter. This is a problem, William. This is exactly the problem men are talking about. Where is this regret rape? Where she regretted it?
I don't even want to use that word. How about regret sex? I mean, this is going to get me, as a woman, as someone identifying as a woman today, this is going to get me kicked out as from my identity, because we know concrete instances of this happening. We've read some on this show during the news segments that people who were intoxicated or insert any number of excuses put themselves in this narrative of the men as the predator, the female as the person who needs to get tricked into sex, and they have consensual sex, or even they're too drunk. Neither of them are sober enough to give consent, but it's always the man that is the person that is held accountable for those actions. And it does, I mean, just that description, it starts to sound like it.
It sounds 100% like it, because this is where this whole movement of you need completely affirmative and verbal consent of, yes, I consent to this sexual encounter, comes from. Because how does Kobe know that she didn't afterwards, as I said, regret it or change her mind or say, I can make money off of this and decide to say it was rape? He doesn't. And there's no way of knowing. So unless you have clear evidence of consent, you shouldn't go ahead with it. I mean, this is a whole other discussion as well with, you know, a professional basketball player, professional athlete. You're putting yourselves in harm's way. He should have never even put himself in harm's way. But that's a whole entire discussion. But the point is, this is just more evidence of the fucking gender war when this happened in 2003. When this apology was given in 2004, and everyone's acting like this is some sort of new thing. No, the seeds were sown years ago. We're paying the price now, and Kobe, who already went through this battle, has to fight it again. Talk about re-traumatizing your victim. Isn't Kobe Bryant being re-traumatized here?
Well, I want to pull a Dr. Drew and be accused of being sensitive for a second. There's an emotional difference between the way men generally and women generally approach sex. And the kinds of things, the kinds of casualness that a man can enjoy are not necessarily the same level that, in general, women can enjoy. And I'm using enjoy in the hedonistic sense here, not in the long-term interest like I usually talk about. And we know that there is emotional... there's emotional damage. If you're someone who is, because I happen to be one of those people that sex and sort of the like spiritual emotional connection are like very integrated. Like if I just randomly hooked up with someone, like I would feel bad about it afterwards, but I wouldn't accuse that person of rape. And I think that because people have this narrative that men are predators in the pursuit of sex, but at the same time they want to be treated like men when it comes to sex. In other words, that sex can be casual in this way. I think that contradiction is what's really driving it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of all that. I just think this woman in this case is using the facade of that in order just to make money off of a, you know, well-known celebrity who has a shitload of money. That's all what I think this was.
All right. Well, I'm not as pessimistic as you, but that's why we're co-hosts. You can be the pessimistic one, and I can be the optimistic one.
You say pessimistic, but I think I give hope to the world. Whereas a fucking Boston Celtics fan, I'm defending Kobe Bryant to the hilt. Okay,
man,
I could
be
like, he played for the Lakers. Of course, he's a fucking rapist.
But that would be tribalism, and we don't do that here on the show.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is giving hope that you can objectively see what is good and what is bad. You know, I sat there the other night and I watched the Lakers' first home game with LeBron James on the team. And I cheered for Rajon Rondo, and everything good that he did, I was amazed by it, because you know what? I think he's an amazing player. That's what not being tribalistic is about. So that's hopeful. You could try to cast me as the pessimist, but I'm not. Cynical is not always pessimistic, William.
Yep.
Go Celtics.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. All right, well, in other mob news, why are faceless accusations allowed to end men's careers? This is from thespectator.co.uk. On the 11th of October 2017, an anonymous Google spreadsheet began doing the rounds of American newspapers and magazines. A document that would have far-reaching consequences for Stephen Elliott, a Los Angeles-based writer and editor. Called Shitty Media Men, the spreadsheet has been created by Moria Dunnigan, a former assistant editor at The New Republic, and named various men rumored to be guilty of sexual misconduct. Dunnigan closed it down a few days later, but by that time it had been widely circulated and many names had been added alongside a summary of the alleged crimes. The entry for Elliott read, "Rape accusations, sexual harassment, coercion, unsolicited invitations to his apartment, a dude who snuck into Binders." Binders is a Facebook group for women writers. The spreadsheet contained a disclaimer. "This document is only a collection of allegations and rumors. Take everything with a grain of salt." Needless to say, that was largely ignored. Numerous articles appeared celebrating the list as a much-needed reckoning, with not many people pausing to consider whether the men on the list were guilty. Elliott had a collection of essays to promote, but interviews were pulled, readings canceled, and his book tour fizzled out. His television agent stopped returning calls, and some friends began to distance themselves. He found himself at the center of a Kafkaesque nightmare. So this article is fairly long, but I wanted to skip down a little bit. So, last week, the story exploded when Elliott filed a $1.5 million lawsuit in New York against Moria Dunnigan and some of the other women who contributed to the Shitty Media Men list. The reaction was predictable, particularly as the news followed on the heels of Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court. One of Elliott's former colleagues described the suit as an outrageous act of violence against Moria, first and foremost, as well as everyone who contributed to the list or found any measure of solidarity or hope to comfort or usefulness in it. It's hard not to sympathize with Elliott if you give him the benefit of the doubt. When a woman accuses a man of rape, the default position should not be to believe her, particularly if there's no corroborating evidence. that's tantamount to a presumption of guilt, a fundamentally illiberal principle. In this case, we don't know if the accuser is a woman, and you would hope even hashtag MeToo activists would stop short of insisting we should believe anonymous allegations. Above all, no one accused of a serious crime who protests their innocence should lose their livelihoods without due process being followed. I'm glad Elliot will have his day in court. So, Justin, here we have anonymous allegations being spread and people just accepting it on face value. What does that tell us about the culture today?
It tells us that everyone is a bunch of fucking cowards, because everybody knows at any point the mob can be turned on them. So rather than put themselves in the way of that train, they don't even step anywhere near the tracks, even if there's someone about to be run over by the train. That is the culture we live in, and they are fucking cowards for that. It is fucking terrible. And there's just so much in this story that is reflective of that, that it is ridiculous. First of all, I love the fact that it says, take this list with a grain of salt. But the only thing that was taken with a grain of salt is the warning to take it with a grain of salt. That's hilarious. The second thing I love is, one of the things he was accused of was unsolicited invitations to his apartment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How do you ask anyone out then? I don't understand. Like, if you ask someone random out to dinner, isn't that an unsolicited invitation to dinner?
Justin, isn't that what paralyzed you early on in your college career about asking women out?
Yes, this is 100% it. I thought you needed to wait for permission. 100%. I thought you needed some sort of sign, some sort of cue, and I couldn't read the signs and the cues. So I was like, well, if there are no signs and cues, I must not be seeing them because I'm too stupid to understand them. Or even worse, I internalized and said, I'm not deserving of those cues. That's why I'm not seeing them. So this idea that you couldn't ask something without permission led to me ending up hating myself. And that's why I'm so against this stuff. And why I take the side of people like this. These are accusations. The reason you don't go around and spread accusations is accusations might not be true, especially if they've never been proven true. And nobody ever thinks that, well, let's be generous, okay? You want me to be generous? You don't want me to be so cynical, William? I'm going to be generous.
Yes, please.
People, this goes back to your original question. People are put in between a rock and a hard place right now. The rock and the hard place are, on one hand, you empathize and you put yourself in that person's shoes and you say, well, what if a false accusation was made against me and that it wasn't buried and people kept hearing about it, even if it's false? So that's the first thing. They think about what they were in his shoes. But then they think, if I speak out against this guy's false accusation and I defend him, well, then they're going to make up a false accusation against me and I'm screwed. So people are basically put into, by the social justice crowd, a lose-lose choice, and they pick the one that is most expedient. The one that's most expedient is just to continue to duck your head and fly under the radar so you don't get in trouble. And again, as you were saying, that's what I did, but it ultimately ever led to me hating myself.
Yeah, it's... I'm also really upset. Upset's not the right word. I'm super confused and slightly angry at this idea that because someone is trying to defend themselves, that they're victimizing the accuser. That seems like just pure emotionalism. Like if someone is trying to defend themselves, I guess it can be cause pain to the person who is the victim if they're really the victim. But it's to be expected, right? Like we shouldn't have outrage for Elliot for defending himself, right? Like this seems like just pure emotionalism, and it's already, we've already just keep assuming their guilt at every step. Well, of course, if they're guilty, they're going to try to cause as much pain as possible, which means they'll stand up for themselves. It's
part
just seems so twisted.
Here. It is twisted, but part of the problem here is we have a deeper lack of integrity in our culture. And just look at sports, where a defender will hold another player and then he'll get called for it by the ref. And then rather than just walk away because he knows he was holding, what does he do? He gets in the ref's face and he argues about it. So now, anyone who's accused of a crime that they did will defend themselves to the hilt, even though they know they did it. Now, of course, people who do more violent crimes like murder or, you know, rape probably have the personalities where they would defend themselves, which is what makes this so difficult. But say it was a crime of passion, right? And I'm not saying rape. Let's take murder. Murder is a crime of passion. If you murdered someone as a crime of passion, isn't the thing of someone of integrity to do to admit to it rather than just try to defend yourself and get off completely scot-free? But we're living in the society now that nobody takes responsibilities for their actions. So everyone sees people who are accused as guilty because that's the only way we can see anyone now. Because
well, I'm not sure if it would be exactly admit to it, but certainly not try to defend themselves and say, it's not me. Right. Like,
right. I was talking in extremes on purpose, to prove a point, because my point is when nobody is taking responsibility for their actions, we have no other choice.
I think there's also another side to look at this. Let's say that you are, I know this is going to be a stretch for you, Justin. Let's say you are a man of integrity and
being straight edge give you integrity.
Let's say someone accused you of something heinous, like, you know, jaywalking in L.A. If you got angry and stood up for yourself, I would say that is what integrity demanded of you, right? Like now we could talk about what's a good effective way to defend yourself. Like that's you know, out of that first moment, that should be what also integrity demands of you. But integrity demands of you to stand up for yourself when you're falsely accused.
Oh, I agree. But then what you're talking about is there's also a difference here, right? So if you're accused privately and you just go, I'll let the courts decide. I didn't do this. I'll let the courts decide. But when you're somebody like Brett Kavanaugh or you're someone like Kobe Bryant, you should get angry because there's a public mob against you. And that's the difference.
Well, here, this isn't a public mob. This is a private mob. This is McCarthyism, pure and simple. I wonder how long before I get on a list like this, right? I don't fit into the I'm identifying as a woman, but when I'm not on the podcast, I identify as a gay, and I don't fit into
you?
Their I know I don't fit into their stereotype. I don't fit into I don't toe the Democrat Party line. I don't go out and join Antifa or protest Brett Kavanaugh or. Think that Trump is trying to destroy, I don't know, gay marriage or something, or even feel like I'm politically connected to trans issues. These are all controversial things.
You don't even like Broadway musicals, do you?
No. I hated Rent. Absolutely hated it. Had no melody in it whatsoever except for the one song.
Well, that proves your point, doesn't it?
Yeah. I. How long before I cannot check the box for gayness? When does my gay card get revoked? And then will that have consequences? You know, I try to participate in things where my interests align, and it's a conversation I have to have all the time. It's like, hey, these are the things that I'm aligned with, and these are the things I want to work on. This is where I want to help. Things inside the quote unquote gay community, and it gets really, really difficult. And I can imagine someone saying, hey, this guy, you know, he doesn't hate Trump. You know, I don't support Trump. I mean, I support Trump when he deserves to be supported, and I oppose him when he deserves to be opposed. But that, even that is controversial.
But William, what you're talking about is so on the nose that I'm not even sure if you realize it or you're just not saying it explicitly. Because exactly what you said is what social justice warriors do. They create a standard that's impossible to reach for their opponents as an excuse to root them out of organizations. Look what they've done with our culture. They've created a standard that's impossible for males to reach. Unsolicited invitations to his apartment. What if he was just taking a chance? What if he was just throwing a Hail Mary? He was like, you know what? I probably don't have a chance, but I'm just going to see what happens. You know, maybe he didn't want a long-term relationship. Maybe he was just like, hey, you want to come over later? And she said no. But now,
how dare she?
How dare he? How dare he? Now he's a sexual predator because of that, because they've created an impossible standard to reach. That is what social justice warriors do. They use the mob. They use, it's in the name, social. They use the social system against you, because what becomes the most important thing to them? How you fit into the social infrastructure, how you fit into the social ecosystem. That is what matters most to them, and they use that against us. And the more we give them any credence at all by having hashtags like believe all women, then we're letting them win, and society will continue to deteriorate. Because it's not about believing all women, it's about hashtag believe all evidence.
Well, speaking of evidence, why the Cherokee Nation's rebuke of Elizabeth Warren matters. Senator Elizabeth Warren's decision to release a DNA test verifying a claim to very distant Native American heritage was always a strategy of necessity rather than choice. This claim dogged Warren in her first Senate campaign in 2012, and regardless of the appropriateness of President Trump's Pocahontas attacks on her, it very much threatens to be a liability if the Massachusetts Democrats runs for president in 2020. Now the gambit seems to have backfired with some prominent Native Americans, most notably the Cherokee Nation. And that group's response is particularly important when you consider this. 6 years ago, it gave Warren a pass. The Cherokee Nation's Secretary of State, Chuck Hoskin Jr., released a blistering statement on Monday in response to the test showing that Warren was somewhere between 1/64th and 1/1024th Native American. Quote, a DNA test is useless to determine tribal citizenship. Current DNA tests do not even distinguish whether a person's ancestors were indigenous to North or South America. Sovereign tribal nations set their own legal requirements for citizenship. And while DNA tests can be used to determine lineage, such as paternity to an individual, it is not evidence for tribal affiliation. Using a DNA test to lay claim to any connection to the Cherokee Nation or any tribal nation, even vaguely, is inappropriate and wrong. It makes a mockery out of DNA tests and its legitimate uses, while also dishonoring legitimate tribal governments and their citizens, whose ancestors are well documented and whose heritage is proven. Senator Warren is undermining tribal interests with her continued claims of tribal heritage. So, Justin, what do you think of Senator Warren's DNA test?
William, you love the buzzword tribalism. This is fucking tribalism.
I do.
Like, literally tribalism.
Literally.
Are we to the point in this country that it's an advantage to be a certain race, to be a representative for the government, to be the president? So now, if you're Native American, that's going to help you? Is that not definitionally racism? Now, this is where they've twisted the definition of racism.
Power
racism
plus privilege, baby.
Power plus privilege. It doesn't just mean judging someone based on their race, blah, 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 blah. Native Americans don't have any power except in casinos. So I guess Native Americans can only be racist in casinos. If I go to Foxwoods in Connecticut, then they can be racist against me. Otherwise, they can't.
I love this because this is people are kind of ignorant. Like, these Indian tribes, especially the Cherokee, and there's many others, are sovereign nations. They have an interesting constitutional relationship to the U.S. government. They're sovereign in many, many ways. And they get to decide who's a citizen of their nation or not. And like he said in his statement, they get to decide, and we can talk about whether they're deciding if they have objective decisions or not. Like, that's a whole different conversation. But they get to decide who is part of their nation or not. And she's been claiming this heritage and this identity. Isn't this cultural appropriation? I mean, isn't she doing what she accuses others of doing all the time?
Oh, she's doing it 100%, but she's doing it for a good cause, William.
Oh, to get elected. Yeah.
Well, no, come on. She's doing it so she can use the power of being elected to make society more equal. Come on, William. It's how Daniel always tells the story about when he was trying to get into a PhD program. No, wait, whatever it was. He was trying to get into a PhD or master's for media, and they told him, if you would renounce truth, then we'll let you in, because the entire purpose of media is not to tell what happened, but to tell the story in a way that gets your agenda across. So they're okay in the media with lying as long as it gets to what they think is the best outcome. This is the same thing here. Whatever it takes for her to get elected so she can get power, and she pretends in her mind, whether she believes it or not, I don't know. I don't know her to be able to say, but she pretends in her mind she wants power to make things more equal and better. But really, it's like you said, she just wants power.
Yeah, one of my best friends, I know this sounds like a cliche, one of my best friends since elementary school, I've known him forever. I'm an atheist, and his son is my godson. That's how long I've known this kid. He is part Indian. He is a member of a tribal nation. He got his membership. He didn't grow up in the best economic circumstances, and there were certain things that he was able to do with his life because of his tribal relationship with his relationship with the tribe. And I don't want to get into too much of his personal details, but like, it was actually a pretty positive thing for his life overall. And to me, it seems really gross what you've got this senator trying to use this as a manipulation, a political manipulation, and it seems just so disgusting. Like, how's this person even going to run for president with this kind of it's just slimy.
Well, they're going to run for president exactly the same way anyone runs for president with that kind of mentality. But the thing is, ultimately, it's incumbent upon us as each person to look at them and say, this is a negativity. This is a negative thing about their personality. This is a knock against them, and it's a reason that they don't deserve to be president. But we're not at that point in our society.
Not yet. But with the midside, we will get there.
So we'll yell a lot on our way there, at least.
Speaking of people we want to yell at, memes may contribute to teenage obesity, lawmakers told. This is an article from CNN. It's been a bad few weeks for memes. In mid-September, the European Parliament passed a new copyright law that some have dubbed a meme ban. Then, Sweden's advertising watchdog ruled that the popular distracted boyfriend meme was sexist, which we covered on the midside. Now, academics have told British lawmakers the internet memes may be contributing to the UK's obesity crisis and doing harm to teenagers on a significant scale. Memes carry dangerous health-related messages and make light of unhealthy eating habits, researchers from Loughborough University wrote in a letter sent to the British Parliament Committee. A substantial number of individuals on Twitter share health-related internet memes with both positive and negative messages, they wrote, noting that many contain inappropriate material. A picture of an overweight child with the caption, "Free food, count me in," was sent along with a letter as an example of the meme the researchers found dangerous. Justin, are memes dangerous to your health, or is this just another form of body shaming? I'm super confused.
I thought you were going to say, or is health dangerous to your memes? Because I think it is. I mean, isn't the causality backwards here? I got a little bit involved in the meme community for a little bit, and it seems like there are a lot of memes that are just people who are depressed making memes about how lame and ordinary and terrible their life is. That's what memes seem to be. You just try to make something funny about something that happens normally every day. It's like bad stand-up comedy. So I think they're getting things in reverse here.
Maybe, but I mean, there are some hilarious memes. I don't know if you've noticed, Justin, but I changed my avatar to a special themidside.com NPC meme because the NPC memes have been going around and people are starting to ban it.
Wait, which avatar? Where, on Facebook?
On Twitter. On Twitter, I'm now an NPC meme. I don't know how familiar you are with that meme, but it's non-playable characters. Someone on 4chan or something made a meme about how social justice warriors all read from the same script, just like non-playable characters in RPGs. You know, they cycle through the same script. And and the Social Justice Warriors were it's that same is he from the Washington Post, that same reporter that tries to blow up memes all the time and say that they're racist. He said this one was dehumanizing and covered it in a mainstream news article, which only made the meme bigger because now you have all the Social Justice Warriors parroting the script about how this is dehumanizing. And then Twitter banned something like 30,000 accounts that had the NPC meme picture. So I'm waiting to see if I get banned with my The Midside NPC avatar.
Wait, so the NPC meme is saying Social Justice Warriors are NPC because they all say the same thing?
Yes, yes. They all have the same thoughts. They just roll through the same script. You know, Trump is an asshole. Trump is a racist. Trump is Hitler. You know, I'm not doing it as much justice because I didn't pull up the article, but yeah, the meme is all the jokes around that meme. If you look at those memes, they're all like they have one of all the late night hosts, and you caricaturize with this NPC meme, and they're all saying the same joke about Trump. You know, it's stuff like that, right? Like it's actually pointing out something funny in reality that all these folks are reading from the same script, But the leftists are offended because they say it's dehumanizing.
Right, and that's, you know, that's a good meme, and it is dehumanizing. That's the fire and fucking point. Thank you. Thank you for understanding the joke of the meme.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
You're dehumanizing exactly. Yourself. It's just fucking, wow, you got the point. You're trying to dehumanize us. We dehumanized you. Fuck off. But you're right. Those are good memes, and I'm not saying there aren't good memes, just like there's good stand-up. But the point is, The subtle point I was trying to make, William, is they fucking picked the worst meme of the worst meme. Like, oh my god, free food, and you show a fat kid. First of all, they're once again what they're missing, like we saw with the first article with memes that we talked about a couple weeks ago, is they're missing the self-awareness of the meme. Isn't the joke of that meme is they know if they eat too much, they're going to become a fat kid? That's why they use a fat kid. That's why it's funny.
So it's the same thing with the NPC meme. They're doing, just like you pointed out, they're doing the joke, right? They don't get the self-awareness part. They get the, I'm not going to say they get the joke. They get the punchline, right? But they miss the self-awareness, so they don't get the joke.
Can you get the punchline but not get the joke?
I think we're seeing that demonstrated. Like with the NPC example, they get that it's dehumanizing and they take offense at that level, but they don't come back and circle around and say, oh, I get that this is they're also making fun of themselves and everyone who parrots the same ideas without really understanding them.
Yeah, and this becomes a deeper discussion at this point about basic philosophical premises and how you can't have the same types of art or same types of humor if you come from such drastically different basic philosophical premises. Now, I'm not saying you can't disagree politically, right? You can disagree politically, but if you're coming from a relativistic standpoint and you're making absolutist jokes, you're just not going to find the other side funny. And this is what happens when these social justice governments, basically, right? When we're looking at these governments in Europe are looking at these things, they're coming from such different premises that they don't get the joke. They get the punchline, but they don't get the joke because their foundations are different. And I think the foundations here are individual choice, which is ultimately individuality. Both of these memes we've talked about, you know, the fat kid saying, free food, that's on the idea of choice, that I know if I eat too much, I'm going to get fat, but I'm going to eat this one time, even if it makes me feel fat. That's the punchline there, right? And that's fucking funny, right? To be like, I could look like this roly-poly kid. And the same thing with the NPC character. You don't have to choose to be this way, but you're choosing to be this way. Whereas the people on that side don't think they have a choice. They think this is the only way to make things right. So because of this foundational lack of a belief in choice, which the other side foundationally agrees with, believes in choice, they can't even understand what's going on. And now we see the basic problem in our society.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to kind of wrap it up, it's tribalism, which I always harp on, and emotionalism. And this is really what's united all these stories that we talked about this week, is this mob mentality, this tribalism plus emotionalism. And it's really dangerous. We've seen this cycle in the past. We saw it with McCarthyism. We saw it with the Salem witch trials. We saw it in even further back than that. We've seen it in history, and the ignorance of the ignorance that people have of history and of ideas, that's the thing that's the only antidote to this. And of course, laughing at it helps too.
History doesn't matter, though, William. How dare you think history matters? That is just their relativistic approach to the world. We can only do what is right in this moment.
What was I thinking? Everything was good in the past. We all lived in tune with nature, and nobody ever died.
Of dysentery.
Or war.
You know what can help, though, William? Art. Art can help. And we've lost our way a little bit for the reasons you're talking about. But I want to, this week, talk about something that gives me hope and has given me hope for a long time. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. At the beginning of every episode, I will review a movie. But if you also want to hear longer form interviews with our panel of Midsiders, you have to just subscribe to Patreon, because we have Patreon only episodes on there. We've done a bunch of stuff like Ready Player One, Solo, a Star Wars movie. What was the last one called? The Last Jedi. That's how little I care about Star Wars. So we do a bunch of Patreon-only reviews on there, and you will only ever get that content on Patreon. Or I think you can download stuff on Patreon, so the only other way you can get it is you can bribe someone else who has our Patreon subscription, and they can download and send it to you. But then why are you giving the money to them and not us, you fucking asshole? Yeah, and hopefully seriously, they're cool enough, they'll give it to us. Anyway, if you want to support us, themidside.com/Patreon or patreon.com/themidside. This week for my review, I want to talk about a movie that came out in the year 2000 when I was still in high school. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I happened to see it on TV the other week, and just while I was watching it, I had a really interesting emotional experience. So the movie is called The Replacements. It's starring Keanu Reeves as Shane Footsteps Falco and Gene Hackman as the coach of a football team. Except this team is full of replacement players. Gene Hackman's been brought in because the NFL went on strike. And because they went on strike, they wanted to keep going rather than cancel the season, and they hired replacement players. The quarterback of this replacement team is played by Keanu Reeves. And this is your basic comeback story. He's down and out. He had a bad game against Ohio State. Now that I think of it, I hope to God, William, he didn't play for Ohio State. Why don't you look that up to see if he played for it. I think it was against Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl, not for Ohio State. Let's just make sure, though. But he had a bad game in college, so he never made it in the pros. And then similarly, there are a bunch of other players with hard luck stories who get a chance here. And in the end, they win and get the team into the playoffs. And even though they're not going to keep playing because the strike is over, the fact that they were able to win 3 out of the last 4 games as replacement players, even against a team that crossed the picket line, it's a victorious moment. And it's a redemptive moment. And that's what sports stories are about. And it's an amazing story for that. And it's funny. And it's just overall enjoyable. It's very benevolent.
Keanu did play for Ohio State University and choked.
Okay, well, that is the one knock I have against this movie, okay? The fact that Shane Falco played for Ohio State. So we'll let that go, William, okay?
Okay.
I thought you were going to say no for a second. William is for new listeners, William is a huge Michigan fan, and I support Michigan because of Tom Brady.
Yeah, hey, Michigan produced Tom Brady. So that's why you support it. And also, we beat Michigan State on Saturday and looked good doing it. So I'm very excited about the rest of the season.
Yeah, Michigan's got a good chance. And to be honest, as a Clemson Tiger fan, the number 3 team in the country, I'm a little scared of Michigan. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, hey, Ohio State lost too. So things are looking up.
So, did you guys, the rankings are already out today. Did
I haven't looked.
You look at that while I talk some more, because you might have gone up and we might have gone up because we killed NC State. This portion of Welcome to the Midside brought to you by Belichick Your Premises, which is still missing. Talk to Daniel and his paternity leave. Anyway, this movie, when I watch it, it always gives me this. It's just, it's benevolent and it gives me a sense of hope, and it's just enjoyable, like, to see them win. And at the end, Keanu Reeves is like, pain heals, chicks dig scars, glory lasts forever. Just like, that's what you get out of sports, and it's encapsulated in this movie. And it's one of those where people would say it's cliche and it's trite, but it's where you reply and say things are cliche for a reason. This movie nails all the cliches well. But it also struck me that it came out 18 years ago, and it wouldn't even be allowed to happen nowadays. So at the same time, I had this sense of sadness when watching the movie because of the tragedy that our society has become. In one scene, the Shane Falco, Keanu Reeves' character, is out in the parking lot, and the players from the team that are on strike are there, and they're moving his car because they don't like that Shane Falco is using their parking spots when he's basically crossed the picket line and gone against their strike. Which, you know, that's what happens in a free market. You go on strike, someone comes in and fills your position and gets your perks. But they don't like it, so they're trying to bully him. So they're trying to move his car. They, like, move his car physically because they're these giant football players. But then, literally, Keanu Reeves' guards, right, they play the position of guards, show up. They're his offensive linemen. And the players, you know, the striking players are like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, we're the guards. We protect our quarterback. Which, again, this sounds trite, but that's fucking awesome. Like, it's just, it's basic, it's simple, and you're like, yeah, I like this. It's showing them rally around their quarterback. But here's where the scene takes a twist. It's a twist nowadays. It's not a twist back then. They pull out guns, and they start shooting the cars of the striking players. And those players are like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? This is crazy. And they leave. Now, in the team meeting that follows, there's just a line about you shouldn't have firearms, and if you do, please relinquish them to management. But can you imagine if that came out nowadays, William? Would the backlash be?
Yeah. It wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be made today.
Right. And then the other thing in it that really stuck out to me was Keanu Reeves ends up falling in love with, quote-unquote, I don't know, they don't really go beyond that, but he ends up hooking up with, and it's very simple, they don't show sex or anything, it's just making out with, the head cheerleader. So we have the white male quarterback hooking up with the white female head cheerleader. Oh my God, if this is not a symbol of white privilege, and also, is he, you know, not assaulting her? Is he not using his power as the quarterback, his privilege? So I'm watching this, and I'm like, this movie is completely innocent. But if you look at it through the lens of social justice, there's no way you can enjoy it. And it's very interesting to me that both of these things, I can hold them in my head at the same time.
And I wonder if any of our listeners can share us a link on Discord with a social justice review of this movie. I think it would be hilarious. I'm sure it's out there on the internet. The internet has everything.
I love how you're leveraging this. Maybe just post it on Reddit and see if somebody can find it. That seems like something they would do. So did you find the rankings?
I did. So Alabama, of course, overrated at number one. Clemson, number two. Notre Dame.
Yeah, we moved up.
Notre Dame, number three. LSU, four. Michigan, number five. So we moved up one spot. But everyone else, minus LSU ahead of us, has no losses. I kind of wish we hadn't played Notre Dame for our first game. But maybe that's just the way things needed to be. But,
you guys lost to Notre Dame?
Yep. Yep, we lost.
You were just
going to
kill my argument. Notre Dame is perpetually overrated. They don't play anyone, but if you guys lost to them, then they are ranked where you deserve to be ranked. Although I would put LSU at number three.
Yeah, yeah. I think you could make the argument, though, Justin, that being the first game of the season, new quarterback, major adjustments to the offensive system, like it took until the second half before the offense even really knew what they were doing.
Hey, I'm with you 100%. I agree with everything you just said. That's one of the toughest things about college football is one loss kills you like that, even in the beginning of the season. And as I just said, Notre Dame is one of the most perpetually overrated.
Well, this is why Notre Dame doesn't play us anymore at the beginning of the season. It used to be that the first, we used to joke that the Big Ten opener was the Notre Dame game because it would be the last game before we started the Big Ten season. But then Notre Dame decided it was too risky to play us early in the season and or play us at all, actually, to get their undefeated season so that they could milk their NBC TV money. So that's why you see them playing like fucking Air Force at the beginning of their season.
Yeah, I was just going to say, no, you're not arguing that Notre Dame takes tough teams off their schedule so they can stay undefeated. They've never done that.
Well, you know, we should have never stopped off the train in South Bend, Indiana in the early 1900s and taught them this game. And then we wouldn't have to deal with this problem.
Well, one last thing before we move on here to trailer takedown, William. You guys have a good shot because LSU and Alabama do play each other coming up here in a few weeks. So one of those two teams is going to lose and drop out of the top four. So you should, if you keep winning, end up in the top four and end up in the playoffs.
Yeah, this is already beating Michigan State. We've already exceeded my expectations for the season. So it's nothing but house money at this point.
1 week at a time. Anyway, didn't mean to turn this into an episode of Belichick Your Premises, but if you missed that show and you're mad that Daniel's not on this show, why don't you let him know? He's D Richards on all the social media. So go there and annoy him on Twitter and annoy him on Instagram. And I don't know if he ever checks Snapchat, but just annoy him in all those places. And maybe he will stop canceling on the show. I think he's at a couple weddings. He's officiating a couple weddings for 2 weeks, I believe, right?
For free. Actually at cost to him. That was the other thing that surprised me. But
I was like that too. They could at least fly you into the wedding. All right, let's talk about some trailers. And just a reminder, Trailer Takedown, all of the trailers are on the website, themidside.com, before the episode airs. Usually I try to get them up between Thursday and Saturday. You can watch all the trailers there before you listen to the episode. You can listen during the episode. Maybe you do a thing where you switch off and we talk about a trailer. Then you watch the next one. We talk about a trailer. Whatever your choice is, you can view the trailers on themidside.com/podcast.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Escape Room is a horror movie in which a bunch of people, I think there are six, maybe five, I don't know, I didn't count, I'm not good at math, are trapped in a room that is booby-trapped, and they have to figure out how to get out. So, you know, just like those escape rooms you can go and hang out in, I guess, hey, you don't really hang out, right? I've never done an escape room. Do you just like hang out? You're like, hey, guys, we're trapped in this room. How do we escape? No, I think you probably try and get out. So like those puzzles you can try and get out of, except they're deadly. Now, the thing to me about this movie, the rooms are deadly. The thing to me about this movie is, first of all, it looks like they just took the premise of Saw and made it less violent and made it grounded in something that we all know nowadays because escape rooms are very popular. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, it's a good marketing thing. On the other hand, it's not very original. But I have to admit, midsiders out there, I have seen every Saw movie. The second thing is, I like the cast of this movie. I do. I like the cast of this movie. Deborah Ann Woll was good in True Blood. I love Tyler Labine. He's one of my favorite actors. He's funny. I wish he would continue to get chances. He seems to, maybe this is a sign of his career falling this low, but he's been in some great movies. And then Zahid from Atypical is in this movie. So based on the premise and based on the cast, I am hugging.
Hug.
William?
All right. So I have to admit, this is not my kind of movie. At least it's not as hyper grotesque as Saw. There seemed to be a little bit of sort of like magical, is this a dream? Are we all just dreaming sort of aspect to it, which kind of hooked me a little bit at the end. But even then, that was not enough to push me over the top. Tackle.
Second trailer.
The Kid Who Would Be King is a children's movie about a kid in middle school. It's not really clear if it's middle school or high school in England who finds the legendary sword Excalibur, and then magic is unleashed upon the world. Now, William, I'm going to put on my cynical hat.
All right.
Because I know you say I'm cynical, so I'm going to put it on and then I'm going to take it off. But to be cynical, the only reason this movie was even greenlit was because of Harry Potter. Let's be serious. It's English.
Yep.
And it's got magic, and it's about a kid who's destined to save the world. Can you not see a studio exec being like, hey, this is the next Harry Potter. Do it. Now I'm going to take off my cynical hat. This looks cooler than Harry Potter. Sorry, Harry Potter nerds out there, but the kid finds Excalibur and then he has to put together a round table and save the world using the powers of Arthur and the Knights
Merlin.
Of the Round
Merlin
Table.
Was there.
Merlin, yeah. Merlin, or that was the word I was looking for. Merlin, Arthur, and the Knights of the Round Table. That's awesome, okay? And maybe you could even argue Merlin looks like Dumbledore, looks like Gandalf. Was Merlin the original Dumbledore and Gandalf? I know it's a kid's movie, and I do wish in the trailer where it said something... Oh, no, they say something rules... And then something else gets schooled. I wish they had just gone with the old fashioned something rules and then evil drools, like we used to say in school. But that's a minor thing. I know it's a kid's movie. I'm here for this, William. I am here for this. This is a hug.
Hug.
All right. Well, I'm going to put your cynical hat on for a second and say, yeah, this is a Harry Potter ripoff. In a sense, like, I don't think this would have gotten greenlit just like you do. But if you notice, they've picked the children in a very peculiar and particular way, which is like they picked the nerdy guy, but he has to be fat and kind of, you know, short. And you have the black chick who's going to be the kick-ass knight. Like this could easily become a walking sort of trope, right? That being said, it looked fun. It looked interesting. There was a couple of giggles in the preview. So I am going to tentatively hug this.
Hug.
Yay. And doesn't this trope of the diverse group of people go back to the original Star Trek?
Yeah, a bit. Definitely. I think at least then it was more of a political statement about in the future people will be working together, which... kind of, while I wouldn't have done it that way, it makes sense in the old left sort of view of the world, right? And we know Roddenberry was definitely of the old left. But now it's if you look at the way the original Star Trek did it, you had people bring their culture to the melting pot of the bridge, let's say, right? The bridge crew. But in the new left way, everyone has to be identical, right? They all have to be the same, but we have to look at the privilege hierarchy to determine who can do what or say what, right? It's very different, right? Like, it's not like you couldn't have had Scotty be that Scottish, right? Like in you can't have the black woman in this movie be anything but the butch knight that's going to kick ass. Otherwise, that would be seen as offensive.
Well, I think in modern Star Trek, the Borg would be the heroes, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably on Star Trek Discovery, that's going to be true.
That's the final season of Discovery. But yeah, you know, things are pretty bad when we're defending Gene Roddenberry here, right?
Oh, man. I would give anything for another Roddenberry led Star Trek at this point. I'm like Dave Chappelle character that's shaking and always wanting cocaine. Like, that's me right now with sci-fi. I can't wait for Expanse to come back on. I'm like shaky. I got the shakes.
Well, fortunately, the last trailer is sci-fi, so let's get to it.
Final trailer.
Jonathan is about a young man who has two consciousnesses in the same body. One is awake during the day. The other is awake at night. They don't really Giggity. Explain in the trailer how this works biologically by saying I am tired. They do a hand wave where they say I am tired all the time. Otherwise, the only real way they don't explain it physically. The other way they really explain this is they leave video messages to each other during the day. Then their interests start colliding because of a woman, because the guy at night falls in love with a woman or starts dating a woman. I don't know. There's an implication. Here's the implication, right? The implication is the guy at night is Mr. Hyde and the guy during the day is Dr. Jekyll. This is, William, I don't know how you feel about this, but even as I'm talking about this right now, This is uninteresting to me. It's uninteresting to me because the direction they go in is making this about a woman. And it's uninteresting to me because they have this premise and they just seem to be doing a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing with it. They could have done more interesting things with the personalities, with how they differed, but they just seem to be going in that direction, especially with the very, very trite and uninteresting day and night thing. Why not just call them Hyde? Why not just call them Jekyll? Why do we have to play this dance? I am out. Tackle.
Tackle. William?
You know, this trailer was done well. It interested me throughout, but it also, the trailer failed because I don't want to see this movie at all. It's so hard. It's hard to do this kind of premise, this sort of split personality premise, and do it in an original way. And there's no evidence in this preview that that's what's been done. Tackle.
Tackle.
I agree that the trailer itself is well made. I was entertained in the trailer, but I think we both agree that there's just not enough with this premise to carry it through for a full-length movie.
Yeah, definitely agree.
All right, let's carry this episode through to its full length with our final segment, Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. Usually for Life on the Midside, I come up with a topic to talk about, either influenced by my life or somebody's life that I've heard about. And we talk about the real life consequences on each of us for these ideas that we're dealing with in the culture. But we also want to hear from you. Submit your questions. Submit your stories that you want us to talk about in Life on the Midside. And William, where is the best place for them to do that?
Well, the best place to do that is on our Discord server. If you go to themidside.com/podcast, for every show notes at the bottom of each episode, we have a link where you can join our Discord, and it's free for everyone. And those of you who are Patreon supporters, you get access to our super secret voice and chat channels where we talk about super secret things. So make sure to join Discord if you haven't already. And if you are a Patreon supporter as well, link your Discord and your Patreon account to get access to those super secret channels.
And when he says super secret, he doesn't mean gay, just to be clear.
Oh, no, there's those two. I just haven't invited you to that one.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm also going to be adding the Discord link to the contact page, and that's where you can find other means of contacting us to submit for Life on the Midside. You can do it on social media as well. If you want to continue to bug D. Richards, just send him submissions. So, William, I have a kind of fun one I want to do this week. Because and this is going to sound funny with what I'm about to preface it with, but when I look at the story about Kobe Bryant this week and I look at Kavanaugh and how they dug up his high school yearbook and tried to get him to explain things he wrote in his high school yearbook to disqualify him for the Supreme Court, I start thinking about what things in my past could be dug up to just completely destroy me at any point in my life. And I'm not saying that these things actually should be used to destroy or actually can be, but in the culture we're using, people will find any evidence from any point in your life to twist against you. Now I'll go first just to give you an example. So I was thinking about, I had about 60 kids in my graduating class and they took a wide picture. This is before iPhones. So they had a photographer come in and they put all 60 of us on like a hill in the soccer fields behind the high school, and they took a picture. So they're not, you know, it's not possible to pay attention to each of us while they're taking the picture. So I just remember that I was standing in the back and I was holding my one wrist with the other wrist, but I was holding it in a way that you could see that I was giving the middle finger. And I just imagine that somebody would dig that picture up and be like, hey, look at this kid. He was an asshole when he was in high school. And that would be the end of it. I just thought that was a fucking funny joke. I still think that's funny because you're going to try and do this and you're not going to have any organization and any oversight or anything. You're asking for someone to do that. And how many people, when they look at that picture, actually even notice? Because they're not examining each individual student. but I imagine somebody would dig that up as a means of destroying me. What do you got, William?
Oh, man, there's so many. It depends on which way you want to go. Who do I want to piss off about my past? I definitely was when I was like, I must have been 14 or 15, and I was the leader of our Sunday school group in my Southern Baptist church. So that could be used against me in the gay community, certainly, and maybe even among some of the left. I'm sure I said things or, you know, spouted off things at that time that were that would piss them off. Oh, depending on what time you would have caught me in high school, I was reading controversial books. So I would be carrying around at the time, I'd be carrying around maybe Rush Limbaugh's book or one of the Christian apologists. Like basically this was the anti-atheist before the atheists got big. I was carrying around those kinds of books and reading them controversially in class because class was super boring for me. Anything else? I mean, damn, it's hard to even think because to me, I was such a different person. It's hard for me to even put myself back into those shoes and try to reproject like what would be offensive today. I don't know. Would being in marching band and being a section leader, would that be considered oppression? Was I white? Was my whiteness oppressing the one person of color that was in our marching band that played tuba? I mean,
well, you were in a group that was trying to get everyone to march to the same beat.
Oh, that's true. How dare you? Yeah, that's true. I'm sure there were many, many inappropriate jokes made in our yearbook. Many. We constantly called we had one Mexican family that owned the Mexican restaurant in my small farm town, and we constantly referred to the oldest one as the Mexican. In fact, he's still that in the contacts in my phone because, you know, we were friends. We had mutual friends all through college. And so I have the same phone book from back then. And it just says the Mexican. So, yeah. What else could be offensive? I'm sure there's 1,000 things like that in my past.
The Mexican's pretty good. I could see them digging up your iPhone contact list.
Yeah, I'd say, like, how offensive is this? You just call this kid the Mexican. Oh, we called we called the tuba player, the one black kid in our school, we called him Oreo. So I'm sure that would be dug up, too. I'm sure that's in the yearbook, actually.
Yeah, and I've heard that before, too. Oreo is, of course, a term for a black person who's white on the inside, just like Twinkie for Asian or banana for Asian. Yeah. So, yeah, all of those things nowadays would be very, very offensive.
I mean, even saying it now, maybe I'm putting my job in danger. Who knows?
Well, that's what I thought was interesting about introducing this as a segment, right? I'm actually kind of glad Daniel's not on this episode because I think he would have balked on this one because he wouldn't want to get himself in trouble. But it's sort of like we're exposing the things we technically wouldn't want exposed.
I'm not exposing anything. I'm not exposing anything. You can expose things if you want.
All right. Well, why don't we expose what we learned this episode so we can end this and I can go watch more football or do some other shit, huh?
There's more football to be watched. Well, I learned that because you guys are not doing Belichick your premises, that football talk is just going to permeate the Midside episodes.
It's like sexual frustration. It's like football frustration. Yeah, it's just going to come out somewhere.
Giggity.
It's like we just had a football wet dream in the middle of this episode.
Yep. You're not going to get me to shut up about the Patriots or Michigan, so.
It was a mid-sidal emission.
Dang. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that maybe I'm not a good Boston Celtics fan because I actually defended Kobe Bryant quite a bit on this episode, and I don't know how I feel about that. All right. Thanks for stopping by. This concludes your journey into the mid-side. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Go Blue. Have a day.
I'd get mad about that, but whatever.
Ha ha, you can try.